Welcome to the 303rd episode of the 4th and 24 podcast with Patrick Winograd. I'm your host, Randy Winograd. In this edition of the podcast, our topics are a review of Patrick's weekend predictions, and then we'll take a look back at the last week in college basketball and NBA action. So let's jump right in with a look back at Patrick's weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our social media handle. Those are at 4th and 24. And we'll start in college basketball, where Patrick went 3-1 with his weekend predictions. In the NBA, Patrick went 2-2 with his predictions. So that brings his total for this past week to 5-3 and his overall record to 1,288-806, which is a 61.5% winning percentage. Patrick, your thoughts on your weekend predictions?
Well, it was the same record as last week, so I won't say anything too surprising, I guess. But, you know, I thought it was a pretty good week. I only lost one game in college basketball off of really an end-of-game choke, and then I lost in the NBA on 1 7-point game that included a 21-point comeback and then a 1-point game. So very easily could have gone 8-0. Definitely couldn't have lost most of the games that I predicted. But starting in college basketball specifically, Auburn beat Kentucky 94-78, a 16-point win to seal the SEC regular season championship, or seal a share of it. They clinched the outright title when Tennessee beat Alabama 79-76. Alabama led this game 76-73 with 30 seconds left, and also had the ball 76 in a 76-76 tie. And got a 5-second violation despite having two timeouts remaining, which led to Tennessee chucking in a buzzer beater from a guy who, well, quite frankly, no offense to Jemai Mashak, but is one of those guys that you leave open from the 3-point line. Sometimes that just happens. But you know what? That's why you call one of your two timeouts. You can't take them home with you on the bus. Definitely should have used that one to avoid a 5-second violation. Also, there were guys open on the inbound, so maybe that's why Nate Oates didn't use it. But regardless, Alabama definitely choked that game. But that game did allow Auburn to claim the outright SEC title, which is crazy when you consider that four of the top six teams in the country, not by the AP poll, but by anybody who actually watches basketball, they're all in the same conference. And yet Auburn has clinched the title in their conference before the last week of the season, something that not many other conferences have. Of course, you know, some still contending for that one, but yeah, a great job by Auburn this season. Obviously, can't say enough about how good that team is. Then you have number three, Florida, who beat number 12, Texas A&M, 89-70. Florida, of course, the only team to beat Auburn this season in SEC play. The only other team to beat them all season is Duke. But Florida looking pretty dominant with this win. They've been looking really good overall recently. Of course, though, they did lose to Georgia. But even in that game, came back from giving up, I think, 50 points in the first half on like 70% shooting. And actually had the lead with a few minutes left. So Florida can score with anybody. There's no defense in the country that's going to stop this team unless they just have a bad game, which they've had a few of those. Tennessee held them to like 45 points or something. But when they played them before, Florida also won by 30. So, you know, goes both ways. Then you have number nine, Iowa State, who beat Arizona 84-67. Really good win by the Cyclones, needing a bounce back after losing a few games with some injury issues. This was kind of their prove it game, and they proved that they are the team that is in the top 10. They are a top 10 team. They're not what they indicated while they were injured, although they still competed with Houston on the road as they were injured. But the Oklahoma State loss was a bad one, so they needed a bounce back for sure. Then the NBA, the Lakers beat the Clippers 106-102. They actually played them twice this week, but this was the Saturday game or the Friday game. I got that one right. The Cavs beat the Celtics 123-116. The Celtics, of course, said were up 24-3 in this game. Won't say what they said, but they were crap talking a little bit. Definitely Jason Tatum. And the Cavs came back in that game. Second half comeback. They were trailing even going into the fourth quarter, I believe, by 1 or 2 points, and Cavs still won. So Celtics did not get that victory. And then the Knicks beat the Grizzlies 114-113, wild ending in that one. But the Knicks getting a 1-point win. Those were the two games I got wrong. And then the Bucks beat the Mavs 132-117. That game I got right, along with that Lakers game, which of course brought me to that 5-3 overall record.
Okay, well, Patrick's predictions for next weekend will be posted on our social media as always on Thursday. Let's now move to basketball action, and we'll start with the most significant college basketball action from the last week.
Well, it is the time of year where there's a lot of significant college basketball action because the bubble is, you got to talk about everybody on the bubble. This year's bubble is incredibly weak, so there's a lot to talk about there because these teams just don't want to secure a tournament bid. But I'll start with Number two, Duke, who beat Miami 97-60, business as usual for Duke. They also beat Wake Forest 93-60 last night, which I'll skip over that in terms of chronological order, just because not worth talking about it that much. Duke's just way better than any other team in the ACC, and it's blatantly obvious. The only way they could lose a game is if North Carolina pulls out the performance of the season on Saturday and is able to get that upset. And then North Carolina will be kind of really back in the conversation for real, as that would give them a signature win this season that they just don't have yet. But then, speaking of a signature win that a team just didn't have, Georgia beat number three Florida 88-83. I mentioned it a little bit when talking about Florida, but this was exactly the kind of win that Georgia needed. You know, they have played so many quad one games all season, but heading into this game, I think they were 2-11 in quad one games, and this is the win that they needed. You know, they had some wins really early in the year. They beat Georgia Tech on the road. They beat St. John's in the Bahamas, which has aged really, really well. Don't get me wrong, that is a very good win now. They'd beaten Kentucky, but other than that, you know, the resume is just a bunch of we kept it close against in other quad one games, and then, you know, they got blown out a few times as well. And they had kind of just been fading just because, you know, they've beaten the weak teams in the SEC and just stayed close with the other teams. You know, heading into that game in February, they had only won one game, and it was against LSU. The rest of their schedule, they lost to Alabama, lost to Mississippi State, lost to A&M, lost to Missouri, lost to Auburn. So despite you can play as many quad one games as you want, you got to win one at some point. And that was the knock on this team. They were in the last four byes before that. Now they are all the way up to a 9 seed, I believe, for me, maybe even at least a high 10 seed, but very close to that 9 seed line, because they also did something else later in the week that boosted their resume even forward, even further, excuse me. But yeah, I do have them as the second best 10 seed. Then you have number five, Tennessee. They beat LSU 65-59. LSU's been keeping some games close and really throwing a wrench in everything in the SEC, because a lot of these teams, when they're playing LSU, this is like the game off. I mean, no offense to LSU, but when it comes to LSU and South Carolina, they are clearly below everybody else in the conference. And yet they're kind of challenging a few teams now, and it's getting a little scary when teams play them to play them close. Maybe this is a team that could end a bubble team's season in the SEC tournament. You know, if LSU beats in Oklahoma, maybe. I don't think Georgia's kind of on that level anymore, but I guess they could be if they lose out in the regular season, which would be hard to do, but they might. You know, maybe in Arkansas, if they get one of those wins, they might actually knock a team out of the tournament, which would be quite interesting. And of course, not what the SEC wants, as they try to set a record for most teams in the tournament. But then you have number six, Alabama. They beat number 24, Mississippi State, 111-73. Alabama's offense had been on fire going into that Tennessee game, and I would argue 76 points on the road against the number one defense in the country, according to KenPom, is still pretty much on fire. Then, speaking of teams I talked about in predictions, here's another one. Oklahoma State beat number nine Iowa State 74-68. I mentioned that Iowa State had a loss they needed to avenge. Well, this was that loss. Just a rough one for them. You know, a lot of injuries though that they've been dealing with, and that's really the thing that should be blamed for this game. That's not a game they lose at full strength, but no Keyshawn Gilbert in that one. Maybe no Curtis Jones either. I honestly couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I know Gilbert wasn't playing and he had missed two games in a row. And then he came back for that Arizona game that they, of course, won, that we talked about in predictions. Then you have number 11, Wisconsin, took care of business against Washington, 88-62. Number 14, Missouri, took care of business against South Carolina, 101-71, that game at home, of course. Number 19, Louisville, kind of struggled a bit. You know, Virginia Tech kept this game close, but Louisville did win 71-66. A win is a win. That's about all you can say about that one. And then number 21, Marquette, beat Providence 82-52. Now, I do want to say this one because, or I do want to talk about this one for a little bit, because Marquette was 2-4 in their last six games heading into this. They had just, and even in the two wins, you know, it's not like they played a ridiculously hard schedule. There aren't four teams in the Big East that are on paper better than Marquette, and they shouldn't be losing four out of six ever, you know, in this version of the conference. So they just needed to show that they had that fire still in them, that top level play, because they just hadn't shown it in a long, long time. So even though this is, you know, not a great opponent, to go out and beat Providence by 30, 82-52, that's the type of win that you need to prove that, you know, you still have what it takes long term to really be a formidable team, not just in that conference, but in the larger scheme of things in the country. Then you have Cincinnati, who beat Baylor 69-67. Cincinnati barely in my next four out. Baylor not quite in the last four buys, but they're pretty close to it. And you know, you probably could find a few people who do have them there, depending on some other placements. But they're very, very, very close to that seed category right now. I believe Georgia is my last, but is the last team in the last or the top, the highest seeded team, excuse me, in the last four buys, and then Baylor's the team right above them. And that's a pretty close battle as well. So it is possible that they could drop down there pretty quickly. But you know, they bounced back over the weekend. They got another win. I'll talk about that later. Then you have VCU, who is the number 10 seed. They beat Richmond 78-60. That is important to talk about because they are not a team that is secure if they lose in the regular season to Duquesne, I don't think. But if they don't lose to Duquesne, I think they do have an at-large bid that they probably would get. The easiest thing for VCU is just to win out. I mean, I think if they win out, the tournament committee, no matter who they lose to in the conference tournament, would keep this team in. They have really, really good predictive metrics for a mid-major. That's just not typical. You know, even a team like Drake that has a great record does not have anywhere near the predictive metrics that VCU does. And that's the reason why VCU still is kind of in this conversation as an at-large and probably will get one because I don't think they're going to lose. And I really hope they don't because this year has way too many power conference teams as at-larges. So I think it would be nice to have a few mid-majors in there that aren't just the conference champions, especially after realignment, just proving that these teams, you know, they still have a spot. They still deserve to be mentioned here and still deserve their shot at the title as well. Then you have West Virginia in the last four byes. They beat TCU 73 to 55. Hard team to evaluate because you kind of have to look at everything without Tucker DeVries. A lot of West Virginia's good wins were with him, but then he got injured. They won a few games without him. He came back. They won a few games with him, and then he got injured again, and now he's out for the season. So it's really hard to evaluate this team. But I think overall, you just have to realize that they really haven't dropped off too much without him. And as a result, you just kind of have to see them how they are, maybe a little bit of a drop. But that's about it. Still, though, definitely a team that needs to keep winning. Can't just, you know, mail it in for the rest of the season if they want to make the tournament. Speaking of teams like that, that goes for both San Diego State and New Mexico, but it was San Diego State who beat New Mexico 73 to 65. New Mexico probably still sitting at a nine seed, pretty comfortably there. But San Diego State needed that win. They were kind of on the true bubble. Now they're in the last four byes. They feel a little bit safer than the other teams on the bubble, though, because even though their metrics might not be as good, they don't have 12 or 13 losses like an Ohio State or, you know, Indiana has 11. They don't have that ugly loss number to kind of hold them back. And they also have a win over Houston on a neutral court that's going to hold up really well throughout the rest of the season. So I think there's a lot of things to like about San Diego State's resume. And they do not have the downsides other than just, you know, metrics not really thinking this team is a tournament team, but really saying this is a bubble team. But the wins themselves indicate otherwise. And also just the quantity of wins also says indicates otherwise. And we know that this program has a pretty good reputation as well. So I have a hard time seeing the world where they miss the tournament. But as long as they just, you know, keep winning, they'll be fine. They're one of the few bubble teams that actually has gotten wins when they've needed to, as I've said. A lot of teams just don't want to be in the tournament this year for whatever reason, and I'll talk about that in a second. But number one, Auburn beat Ole Miss 106-76. This was, of course, before they clinched the title against Kentucky. Just business as usual for this Auburn team. Again, just mauling teams on their way to that title. Then you have number seven, excuse me, St. John's, who beat Butler 76-70. St. John's played two close games this week, but you know what? It is what it is. They're not going to blow out everybody, especially when they're basically winning every game. And they did win the Big East title, I believe, this week and actually clinched an outright title when they won again on Saturday. But then you have number eight, Michigan State, who beat number 16, Maryland, 58-55. I don't know if I want to say this was one of the most entertaining games of the season because it was just a really ugly game. Both teams playing way too fast for their own good, but it did end on a half-court buzzer beater. And you know, Michigan State was up, I think, 52 to 43 or 53 to 42, one of those two. I think they were up by nine, so that would be 52 to 43 with about 3, 4 minutes left. They let Maryland come back in this game, but then, you know, just the very end, Jacoby Gillespie takes a shot with about 4 seconds left when he could have just ran the clock out, and taken a shot right at the buzzer, pulled up for three, missed it, Michigan State got the rebound, Trey Holloman half court heave, and now Michigan State controls their destiny to win a Big Ten title, which is not something anybody predicted at the beginning of the year. Then you have Vanderbilt, who beat number 12 A&M 86-84. Vanderbilt is the only team that has been consistently on the bubble, double-digit seed range all season long that actually has won some games. And now all of a sudden, they're kind of sitting at an 8 or a 9 seed because really, again, as I said, no one on the bubble wants to win. So if you start winning, get some big wins, you all of a sudden skyrocket up the seed list. This was one of those wins. Vanderbilt got this one against an A&M team that's somewhere in the top 4 seeds, depending on who you ask, a 3 or a 4. Definitely on that border, probably a 4 for now, even though I think I had them as a 3, but I'm starting to reevaluate that one. Then you have number 17, Kentucky, who beat Oklahoma, the last team in my current field, 83-82. Again, Oklahoma is the perfect example of the team that just doesn't want to be in the tournament despite having a great non-conference. You know, they started the season 13-0. They beat Michigan on a neutral court. They won the battle for Atlantis, but if you actually look at their strength of schedule, you'd think that it would be a lot harder. They avoided Arizona and Gonzaga, I believe, in Atlantis somehow. So they did go undefeated there, but they didn't really beat anybody on the way somehow. I think they played Davidson and then Providence, which is just, it's just not, that's not good enough. You know, even though they went 3-0, I think they beat, like I said, I think Louisville, Davidson, and Providence, I think were the 3 wins that they got, which is just not good enough. They have something in the 300s for non-conference strength of schedule. So even though they went 13-0, wasn't a very good schedule, or sorry, 145 was their non-conference strength of schedule, which just, again, it just isn't that good. And then when they've played teams in the SEC, they've struggled. They are 4-12 in conference play. So there is kind of an argument that, you know, they shouldn't be in based on the conference record. But at the same time, you know, I've seen a lot of people that say, first of all, conference record isn't a thing that the committee uses. They've never said they used it. They don't use it. I mean, yes, it looks bad like on the eye test, but that's not a metric. So I don't know how that's really going to impact them. And the other thing is, you know, people are saying if they had beaten teams that are ranked similarly in KenPom or in the net, in conference, like, is it really that big of a difference if they had beaten, you know, Mississippi State instead of beating Michigan? Is it a big difference if they had beaten Kentucky instead of Louisville? It's the same thing. One just came earlier in the season. We're not seeding these teams off the last 2 months only. You know, it's the full scope of the season. So I still do have Oklahoma in, even though a lot of people are very down on their resume, but they still do need to pick up some wins. I think that's very, very clear. Then you have number 18, Memphis. They beat Rice 84-72. Memphis, again, just need to keep winning. You know, it'd be nice if they could get a few of these wins by larger margins. The metrics would like that. Maybe kind of bring their KenPom, their BPI, their T-Rank, all that stuff up a little bit. Maybe the net a little bit. But you know what? As it stands, they have a great collection of non-conference wins and a few inexplicable losses. And it is what it is. That's just kind of what their resume is. They're very similar to kind of the FAU teams of the past 2 years. And they probably will get a little bit of a better seed though, because they play in a tougher conference than FAU did the first time around, and also probably a better version of the American than FAU played in last year. And also Memphis's non-conference wins are very, very impressive. Then you have number 25, BYU, who beat Arizona State 91-81. BYU is one of the hottest teams in the country. No one's really talking about it. I mean, I guess them being ranked is enough to say there's been some conversation about it, but they are just on a heater, and they have been for a while now. Then you have Indiana, who's in my last 4 in. They beat Penn State 83-78. They just need to keep winning. They have 2 games this week that are very, very winnable, but also very losable. I believe Ohio State. And then Oregon, I think, tonight is kind of the really hard one. I don't know if they can beat Oregon on the road the way the Ducks are playing right now. But if they could get that win, honestly, if they get that win, they're in the tournament. I just think that'd be pretty secure at that point. That'd be a very, very good win to go and grab right before the end of the season. Then you have Boise State in the first 4 out, who beat Utah State 82-65. Utah State and New Mexico are on the border of quad one wins, but they're not quite there. So it's really hard for a Mountain West team to kind of get the wins that you need to advance your resume until the conference tournament, where all of the teams that are in the top 50 of the net, of course, become quad one wins because those are neutral court games instead of home games. And then in that case, there are a lot of quad one wins out there because Utah State, Boise State, New Mexico, and San Diego State are all in the top 50 of the net, but none of them are in the top 30. So That is something that is interesting to note in that conference. Boise State maybe one of the, get that beats one of those teams in the conference tournament. That's probably enough as long as they make it to the semis or the finals, I would think. Depending on how the rest of the bubble kind of shakes out and how the rest of the teams play. And speaking of the bubble, Arkansas in my last four in beat Texas, who's now in my next four out, 86 to 81 in overtime. Texas had two opportunities against bubble teams. This one against Arkansas was on the road. They took it to overtime. That's not a terrible result. But then I'll talk about what they did later in the week against Georgia, and that was kind of the killer for them. But Arkansas keeps themselves alive with, or keeps itself alive with this win over Texas. It's a good one, not an amazing one, but it's a good one. Then you have Ohio State. They're the last bye currently. Probably shouldn't be that high, but again, really congested bubble. No one's winning games. They beat USC 87-82, which for now is barely a quad two win. It was a quad one win that night, but USC sitting at 76th in the net. So one team away from being a quad one win. Then you have number 15, Michigan, who beat Rutgers 84-82. Talked about them picking up the ugliest conference win of all time last week. This one was not so pretty either. They gave up 59 points or 57 points in the first half. 57 points in the first half. And then played a lot better on defense in the second half, only gave up 25. But they had to come back from down 13 in that game to actually come back. And then also had to hit a 30-foot buzzer beater from Namari Burnett. So Michigan playing with their food a little bit too much, and that has been a problem recently. And then we'll talk about what happened later in the week. Then you have number 23, St. Mary's. They beat Loyola Marymount 58-55. St. Mary's, the WCC champions this year, thanks to their sweep over Gonzaga already. So that game didn't really matter, but it was there. Then you have UCSD. They're currently a 12 seed for me, but they're an at-large candidate. They're a legit large candidate. Every time I do my bracket, depending on who's gotten wins on the bubble, they bounce between an 11 and a 12 seed. I think if they lose to UC Irvine in that conference tournament specifically, or even CSUN, I think they're actually going to be in the tournament anyway. But it just depends. They have to close out the season well, get some more wins by margin, and then move on to the conference tournament. Then you have Northwestern, who beat Iowa 68-57. Look, Northwestern, honestly, I hate to say it as someone who goes to Northwestern. Northwestern has no business being in the tournament conversation with two season-ending injuries to two of their top three scorers. And yet they are, because again, the bubble just refuses to win games, and Northwestern had won three in a row after this game. So of course they are still in the conversation, because that I'll talk about what happened to them later in the week that probably knocked them out of the conversation, but I'll get there later. Number 20, Purdue beat UCLA 76-68, subtle foreshadowing with these games back to back. But Purdue had lost three in a row, needed this win. They got it. It was close at the half. I think it was 37-35, but Purdue pulled away a little bit in the second half, claiming a good home victory against UCLA. Then you have VCU. They beat Davidson 80-56. Again, just monitoring VCU because they have to keep winning. They can't really afford a loss with the overall state of the A10. Then you have number one, Auburn, of course, talked about this in predictions, beat Kentucky 94-78. Again, talked about all the implications of that. Auburn pretty close to clinching the number one overall seed, I'd be quite honest. Maybe there's a, I mean, I guess if they lose once and Duke wins out, then Duke could get it, because Duke also beat Auburn. And Duke is a little bit closer in some of those metrics, but it's going to be hard for that to happen just because of how weak all of the ACC is. But speaking of Duke, they beat Florida State 100-65. Again, just hammering all the teams in the ACC. Already mentioned that they beat Wake Forest by 33 last night as well. Number three, Florida beat number 12, A&M. Talked about that in predictions. Number five, Tennessee beat Bama. We talked about that in predictions. Iowa State beat Arizona, which we talked about in predictions. And then moving on to the non-predictions games from Saturday. Number 10, Texas Tech beat Kansas 78-73 on the road. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a season where Kansas has as many home losses as they do this season under Bill Self. I just can't remember any time where that team has lost. I feel like it's three or four games at home this year at this point. And you know, even North Carolina was able to make it close at the start of the season. That might be a game that, looking back on it, might be, I mean, that might be a game where if North Carolina had won, that might be the thing that could have propelled them into the tournament. But Kansas, yeah, they're 13-3 at home. The three home losses, one of them to West Virginia, was just a real shocker. This one, not so much, because Texas Tech has been really good all season long. But losing to West Virginia at home, losing to Houston at home in that crazy double overtime game, however long ago that was, and losing to Texas Tech at home, It's just not the Kansas way. And by the way, I would not be surprised at all if they lost to Arizona on Saturday at home. That is very, very, very possible. So it's an interesting season for Kansas. Really, they lost to every good team they played at home other than North Carolina. I mean, if you look at their home wins, it's Arizona State, it's NC State, a bunch of non-conference games against, bad teams. UCF was a close game at home. Colorado, Oklahoma State, these are not good teams. So they really have struggled to defend home court this season. And as a result, it's the worst Bill Self season that they've had, which, you want to talk about having lofty expectations as a program. If your coach is issuing statements about your fan base targeting players when you are a sixth seed in the tournament, you might be a little bit too spoiled. Their worst season under Bill Self is a four seed in the NCAA tournament, which means that this season is going to be their worst season of all time under Bill Self. But it's just, I mean, this fan base is ridiculously spoiled. There are so many fan bases in the country that would beg to be, 19 and 11, and at the like midpoint, maybe higher of the middle of the pack in their conference every season, every year. And Kansas is complaining that this is the worst season of all time. But the funny thing is, they're actually right. It is their worst season in like 20 years. This is the worst season Kansas has had since I've been alive. And it's still pretty respectable season, all things considered, for a normal team if you take away the name of Kansas. But of course, because it is Kansas, the expectations are a lot higher in terms of consistency as well. Then you have number 13, Clemson, who beat Virginia 71-58 on the road. Good win for Clemson. Vanderbilt, like I said earlier, the bubble team that's winning, beat number 14, Missouri, 97-93 in overtime. So that's two high quad one wins for Vanderbilt this week. That's enough to get them into the tournament and lock them in. They're probably more debating whether they're going to be a 7-8 or a 9 seed than they are in or out of the tournament anymore. They just needed those quality wins because their non-conference wasn't too impressive. They got them now, though. They've had them for a while. But then you have number 16, Maryland. They beat Penn State 68-64. Maryland, 0 bench points in this game, despite their bench players, I think, playing 35 or 40 minutes. That has been their thing all year long, but the Crab Five is doing its thing, and that's all they need. Number 25, BYU beat West Virginia 77-56. Again, BYU really hot this year. North Carolina, in my first four out, beat Syracuse 92-73. They need wins by margin like this, and then they need one signature win either in the conference tournament or in the NCAA, or against Duke in the last game of the regular season. Then you have Ole Miss, who beat Oklahoma 87-84. Like I said, Oklahoma in my last four and as my last team in. This is a game that they could have won, but just kind of not choked away late. It was really close throughout, but they did lose this game. Then you have Xavier, who is now in my last four in because they beat Creighton 83-61. That's the best one they could have picked up. I've said for a while that if they just go undefeated at the end of the season against a weak schedule, they'll be fine. It would have been better if they could have, beaten Seton Hall by more last week, that kind of thing. But you know what? A win is a win. And then this one, they got the margin to go along with the victory over Creighton. That one propels them into the bracket just barely, but they are there. Then you have Stanford, who beat SMU first, who's in my first four out, 73-68. One of the reasons why Xavier was able to make it in. Indiana beat Washington 78-62. Again, they continue their winning streak as they're in the last four in. Boise State beat Fresno State 66-61. They're my first four out. Had they won this game by maybe 15 or 20, they might have been in just because of the way the metrics shake out, because Fresno State is a horrible team. But that is not the case, so they're not. Then you have San Diego State, last four byes. They beat Wyoming 72-69. Again, another one of those games where maybe they could have climbed off the bubble entirely, but not a win by a big enough margin, especially when you look at Georgia, who is still in my last four byes, but was probably out of the tournament before last week. They beat Texas, who's in my next four out, as I mentioned, 83-67. That went on the road. So Texas playing another bubble team, at home, a game they need to win, and they get blown out at home. That's a really bad look. I don't know if it was for marketing reasons, but Joe Lunardi had Georgia as his last or first team out and Texas as his last team in, I believe, or maybe vice versa, before this game. ESPN used that to hype up the game. They called him in over the phone during the game. Of course, nothing matters but the final bracket anyway. So, you never know if they were just trying to drive up conversation. I didn't think it was really that close between those two teams heading into that game, even, but it still was a very important game and a game that when you're Texas, you're looking at a team that's very easily within your category of teams, just like Arkansas was heading into that game, where Arkansas took care of business at home, even though it took overtime. Texas did not. Then you have UCSD. They beat Cal State Fullerton 155. This is the type of margin you need as an at-large candidate in a really not overall strong conference. They got that win, though. Gonzaga beat San Francisco 95-75 at the Chase Center on the road. That's a quad one win for them, as they will probably be overseeded again this year, but because Predictometrics love them. But, you know, this Aggies team is still really good. I mean, they have a lot of potential. They also could flame out pretty early, and it wouldn't surprise me either, but they have a lot of potential. Speaking of a lot of potential, Illinois beat number 15 Michigan 93-73. Talked about it a lot. This team takes a ton of threes. When they make them, they're really great. When they miss them, they're really bad. They happened to make all of those threes this weekend. They were shooting 38% from three. Also got a ton of extra attempts from offensive rebounds. They bullied Michigan on the boards and got that win. Then number eight, Michigan State beat 11, number 11, Wisconsin, 71-62 to up their odds in the Big Ten title race. And then number 18, Memphis beat UAB 88-81. These are the two best teams in this conference. Maybe North Texas gets an argument there against UAB, but UAB has been playing like that second best conference. And also, they were the preseason pick to win the conference, even ahead of Memphis. So definitely a hard fought game between these two. UAB, a tournament team last year, and returned their best player, Yaxel Lendenborg, who is honestly the most underrated player in the nation. He is a menace. He's a triple double guy. I mean, he could get triple doubles in any game. He's an easy, he's a walking double double already. He's, you know, a guy who averages probably somewhere around 16, 17 points and, you know, 8 or 9 rebounds, and then also has four assists to go with that. And then the games of last night, I already talked about Duke. UCLA beat Northwestern, who's the eighth team out, 73-69. Talked about this being foreshadowed earlier. That probably knocks Northwestern out of it in really brutal fashion. If you go back and look at that game, but you know, that's happened to Northwestern maybe 5 or 6 times this year. So not too surprising when you think about it. But then you have number three, Houston, who beat Kansas 65-59. Kansas outshot Houston in this game on the road, but lost the turnover battle by more than 10. And that was kind of the thing that did them in this game.
All right, that wraps up our look back at college basketball action from the past week. Let's now turn our attention to the NBA. We'll start in the Eastern Conference.
Of course, I talked about the big clash already between the two teams at the top of this conference. The Cavs beat the Celtics this weekend, extended their winning streak to 10 games in a row. They are 50-10 on the season. And again, how many times have the Cavs won 10 to 12 games in a row this season? I feel like this is at least the second one, maybe the third streak. And yet you look at all time and you see Golden State Warriors at 73-9 and the Bulls at 72-10. You say, how did those teams actually pull that off? Because the Cavs have been, I mean, this is as dominant a regular season team I've seen probably since the Warriors, and still 50-10. I say only 50-10, but really they already can't break the record, even if they went 22-0 to end the season, which is not going to happen anyway. Then you have the Celtics. They're at 43-18, still have a good cushion between them and the Knicks, who are 40-20. The Knicks 2.5 back of the Celtics for that 2 seed. Both of those teams 7-3 in their last 10. Then the Bucks and the Pacers are tied for the 4th and 5th seeds. At 34-25 each. The Bucks are 7-3 in their last 10. The Pacers are 6-4 in their last 10, but not too far behind them, trying to disrupt the rematch from last season's playoffs. You have the Detroit Pistons at 35-27. They are 9-1 in their last 10, arguably behind maybe the Cavs, only the hottest team in the league. Maybe, I mean, Cavs, Thunder, Lakers, I think, are the other teams you throw into that conversation. We'll get to those other two later. But the Pistons are now a half game back of the Bucks and the Pacers for that 4 and 5 seed, and 5 games ahead of Miami, who is the current 7 seed at 29-31. Like I said, 5 games back of the Pistons, 5.5 back of that bunch up between the Pacers and the Bucks. Then you have the Magic, who are 29-33, just still battling through those injury issues. They're 22 games back of first, which means that they're 1 back of the Heat and 6 back of the Pistons to climb out of the play-in bracket, but currently the 8th seed. Then you have the Hawks, who had a buzzer beater win last night by Caris LeVert, but they are 28-33 on the season, a half game back of Orlando for that 8th seed, which really is an important difference, because if you get the 8th seed, you have to play only one. You potentially could only have to play one game. You win that one game in the 7-8 game, and you're in. And if you lose it, you play against the 9-10 winner at home. But if you're the 9 seed, of course, you have to win 2 games. You have to beat the 10 seed at home. Then you have to go on the road and beat the 8 seed. So could be an important distinction there. The Hawks definitely could help themselves out if they could get to that 8 seed. Then you have the Bulls, who are not a team that should be in the playoff conversation, but they are. They're at 24-37, and they have a 2.5 game cushion over both the Nets and the Sixers, who are both 21-39. I don't know how the Sixers and the Nets are still in the same conversation, but of course, now being announced, Joel Embiid out for the season. The Sixers season probably done. I mean, this is just not a really good team. They're 1-9 in their last 10. At some point, you have to stop looking at the talent on paper and start looking at the team on paper and what they've been doing all season long, which is a whole lot of nothing. Then you have the Raptors at 19-42. They're 2.5 back of the Sixers and the Nets, 5 back of the Bulls. I mean, I guess they're still a contender given how bad the bottom of the East is. But again, I think that 10 seed is just a battle for who's going to lose to either the Hawks, Magic, or Heat in that first round of the play. And I think those are the only three teams that aren't in the current playoff bracket in that top six. I think those are the only three teams that actually really have enough talent to be a playoff team. So that 10 seed doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. They're probably just going to get knocked out early. But still worth mentioning. Then you have the Hornets at 14-46. They've lost 7 in a row. And the Wizards are at 11-49, having lost 7 of their last 10, but not on a long losing streak like the Hornets are. And then in the West, you have the Thunder in first at 50-11. They are 8-2 in their last 10, but they're not the hottest team in the West. That would be the Los Angeles Lakers. They have won 6 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10. They just beat the Clippers twice. And they're, like I said, 38-21, second place, the second seed in the West. Just a ridiculous thing to say. But that is the current case. I talked about it last week that, you know, they were last week, I think, in the 4-5 game or the 4-5 matchup, which would have been with the Rockets. And then they could maybe play the Thunder in the second round. Now that would have to be a conference final series, which is a really interesting twist on things. The Nuggets, of course, technically tied with the Lakers at 39-22. They are 7-3 in their last 10. Then you have the Grizzlies, who are, again, only one game back of the Lakers and the Nuggets in that 4 seed. But that's because they're 3-7 in their last 10. The Grizzlies definitely could still be in the 2 seed if they had just had a decent last week and a half. But instead, they've lost 3 in a row and 7 of their last 10. So they are the 4 seed. Then you have the Rockets. They are 1 game behind the Grizzlies, 2 behind the Lakers and the Nuggets. They're at the 5 seed currently. They're 5-5 in their last 10, 37-24 overall. The Warriors have now climbed out of the play-in bracket entirely and into the playoffs. They are 8-2 in their last 10, and they are 33-28 on the season. Although there are three teams right behind them, a half game back, the Clippers, the Kings, and the Timberwolves. The Clippers, of course, were in that 6 seed until the Lakers beat them twice last week. The Kings have won 4 in a row to kind of bring themselves back into this conversation. And then the Timberwolves are stumbling a little bit. They're 4-6 in their last 10, just like the Clippers, but, you know, still a strong team on paper, and we know that. And then the last team in the play-in bracket, it's the Dallas Mavericks. They're 32-30. They're 1 back of the Timberwolves, Kings, and Clippers, and 1.5 back of the Warriors. They're 3.5 ahead of the Suns, who were the first team out of the play-in bracket. But it's worth mentioning that Kyrie Irving suffered a pretty gruesome injury last night, and they're already without Anthony Davis and Derek Lively. They have no big men right now. Gafford's also out. It's basically just a Dwight Powell as their only true big man who's healthy. And then to also lose Kyrie on top of that, I just don't know how they're going to stay in this race with those guys out, especially if Kyrie's out long term. I mean, I guess you just got to stay afloat a little bit until AD comes back and hope they can make a run at the end of the season. But, you know, if you look at the other teams, it's the Suns and the Blazers who really have any real chance. The Suns, 3.5 back, just kind of have been dysfunctional all year long. They're 2-8 in their last 10. Now talking about trading Kevin Durant in the offseason and not really talking about basketball, but 28-33 on the season, like I said. Then the Blazers are 5-5 in their last 10. Maybe they sneak in there below the Mavs, although, again, that's kind of a similar spot to the 10 seed in the East. I feel like there are two more teams that are more talented here in the West, but, you know, the way that the injuries have shaken out with these teams and also the synergy. There might be more talent overall, but just not the right circumstances for any of these teams to actually go out and beat a team like the Timberwolves on the road to advance in that play-in bracket. But the Blazers, 28-34, they're competing, and that's a good thing for them because they are still a very, very young team. And then you have the Spurs, who are 25-34. They're 3-7 in their last 10. No Wemby for the rest of the season. Obviously, that's a big deal. And they are 5.5 back of the Mavericks and 2 back of the Suns for that 11 seed that isn't really that important. Then you have the Pelicans at 5-5 in their last 10, 17 and 44 overall, 9 games back of the Spurs, and the Jazz, who are in last place in 15 and 46. They are 3-7 in their last 10.
Okay, well, that wraps up our look back at the NBA. It also wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 11th, where we will once again look back at Patrick's weekend predictions and talk about basketball with another weekly review of both college basketball and the NBA. In the meantime, please be sure to check out Patrick's additional content, including his weekly college basketball bracket updates, which will be posted twice weekly. That's on Mondays and Fridays throughout the remainder of the season, which is only has a couple weeks left, and his picks for next weekend's games, which will be posted as always on Thursdays. All of this content is on our social media handles at 4th and 24. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24 on both Twitter and Instagram. And some of that content still remains on our website, 4thand24.com. Thank you for listening.